I'm very pleased to welcome, well, to welcome back to Fremantle Shipping News, Mark McGlasis. Welcome back.
Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. But the reason you're here is because you're doing super well. You've become a you've become a Facebook star.
I have. It's a funny story and how that happened. We'll tell that story.
Well, we will. Well, just to remind our listeners, many people know you or know of you. They know that you were a journalist, but you particularly made your name as a film critic on the West Australian when the West Australian was a newspaper.
Yes.
And travelled the world. And in fact, people can hear your story by listening to the podcast on Fremantle Shipping News.
Yes, indeed. I was a film and an arts writer for many, many years in the West Australian. And I took a redundancy as the paper started to shrink and shrivel, as many, you know, media across the world did, and trying some different things. And more recently, my Facebook somehow has grown a bit big.
Well, I'm not surprised. Just to also tell the readers, they should go back, just put Mark McGlasis in the search function on the homepage of Fremantle Shipping News, and all of your fabulous pieces, little short stories really,
yes,
built on restaurant and cafe, coffee shop reviews will come up. And you must read them, listeners, they're brilliant. I like the guy who was off Broadway, but he was working now part-time at Bunnings in O'Connor.
That's a bit of fun. That's because I actually set out to write you some restaurant reviews and realised, you know, that I couldn't say anything interesting, so I found people that were more interesting than me, and I thought it wasn't a bad tactic. But at the same time, Michael,
Did you always have a Facebook page?
Look, funnily enough, it's interesting with, I guess I was watching the rise of social media at the West Australian, because the West Australian was always attempting, what are they going to do with new media? And I remember at one point, Michael, there was a room at the West with 50 people inside of that room. They were trying to work out what to do with this new thing. Then they sacked all of those people, and it would pop up somewhere else. They just didn't know what they were doing in social. And I still, to some extent, there, I think it's taken them 15 years to work out kind of what to do with it. And I was always so busy as a journalist. We were extremely busy in my time. We were, you know, we were covering the arts from top to tail, movies from top to tail. And so I was always too busy to worry about social media. I put something up here and there, and but I didn't even think about it. But when I, you know, left the West, I started to, we were looking into place, you know, some thoughts we had, particularly the film, because that was the area that kind of shrunk down. And I started to use Facebook. I did a series called Movies with Mark, and we built up quite a few thousand followers there. It was a way of advertising what we were actually doing there. I put the odd film review up there, but, you know, they would never get very big following. I'd get, you know, 30 comments, 25 comments, someone like this or like that. Although I did actually review the film with Timothy Chalamet called the Bob Dylan film. I forget the name.
It's taken from Bob's
Like
songs,
a Rolling Stone, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Brilliant film. And that actually literally went viral. It ended up with like thousands of comments, and we're trying to work out why. I think, you know.
So that's the question. I mean, there was a time when people, it was only 2007, 2008, Facebook really takes off, the movie, social network, whatever was made. Instagram arrives. I remember people showing me their Instagram. Yeah. I thought, who's interested in Instagram? And now people actually use it as a means of actual communication. They say message, I can't follow it all.
Oh, yes, they use Messenger, yes, indeed.
But Facebook seems strangely to be coming out of sort of a decline.
And everyone seems to think that it's the kind of the daggy old person's medium, but it's still got a big following. I think it's still the biggest social media platform, you know. And I guess people of my generation have taken to it, because I think putting pictures of themselves on TikTok is probably not what's really wanted. And it does still generate discussion, you know. And so what happened with me is that I've sort of stepped into a number of worlds, the world of the arts, a little bit of politics. I was writing for WA Today. I've been sort of contributing there, a little bit of politics for you guys. And so I started to build a kind of fairly broad following. But I made some comments about Gaza, I think 2 years ago.
Gaza.
And I was just sort of horrified at the destruction. And I threw up a comment there, and people started to jump onto there. But equally, I was starting to be attacked by people that I knew from the Jewish community. And then people pushing back against them. All of a sudden, my Facebook page became a battleground.
Now, tell me, when you were talking about the Bob Dylan movie or other things in the past, was it all just positive responses, all sweetness and light, or did you even get a bit of kickback?
Oh, then? A little bit of debate. You know, I hate the film, love the film here, but it was never that kind of, it wasn't vicious, not like the Gaza debate and the Israel debate. And as I say, two particular people who actually are part of my, people that I know, really started to attack me really viciously, calling me an anti-Semite and this, and then people were jumping onto my defence. Then all of a sudden the Jewish community started to come in there.
So was this pre or post Bondi?
It's all pre-Bondi, so and it was building up. It was slowly building and building, and people started to love to come to my page to see me being attacked by the Jewish community. And that was building and building, and I'd get a few hundred here and there. But the real turnaround came when, after Bondi, and particularly a post that I did on I think Benjamin Netanyahu had been attacking Albanese for not protecting the Jewish community. And I wrote it. One night, it was at 5 o'clock, I just noted down, I said, it's a bit rich that Netanyahu would be attacking Albany for not protecting the Jewish community when he failed to protect, you know, his own community. I put it down there, and I came home, I think, a couple of hours later, and there were hundreds and hundreds of comments. And I could actually see literally the numbers ticking over as I was staring at the post. Oh my God, it's really hit something. And within two or three days, it ended up with, I think, 23,000 comments.
23,000 comments. Now, I know from shipping news activity that it's one thing to have someone, when you've posted a story, like it or even share it. But when they make a comment, when they go to the trouble of saying, he's on the money, or I don't agree, or whatever else they say more vitriolically or more praiseworthy, you know something's happening.
And then it got huge, it got shared hugely. I think that's where, when things go viral, I think it's when you start seeing a lot of shares. You know, so it'd be hundreds and hundreds of shares. And in the end,
the numbers were,
I'm just having a look at the, I've actually got a log on that you can see the metadata of what's actually going on. And I was just looking at the, and so it ended up with 37,000 reactions, but 900,000, nearly a million views.
Unbelievable.
And so that's like mostly Australians, so that's like one in 27 Australians or whatever. And it was huge. And then what was interesting to me, Michael, about this, I then followed up with another post saying, this was the time when the Murdoch media was really going to town on Bondi and attacking Albanese. And I was finding that when I can see that on the comments on mine, they were mostly positive. There was some
positive
pushback.
Which way?
On the Albanese Netanyahu one. And I thought to myself, wow, that's interesting that the Murdoch media were giving us the impression that the country is swinging this way against Albanese. But I'm seeing nearly a million views on my Facebook, which most of it's positive. And I thought to myself, wow, we really don't know what's going on. Social media gives us another whole view.
And this is one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you about this, having become aware of the nearly a million views. I mean, there's always been a lot of talk about social media, what you make of it, the demographic that's looking at it. The shipping news's experience is that actually the different demographics are sort of looking at the shipping news in equal numbers. It's, you know, it's the younger ones as well as those in their 30s, 40s, 50s. Older people like me, all looking at it. But what have you learned? What part of your old perceptions have been shattered in the course of what you've been doing?
I think people want dialogue now more than they want just the straight news. They're seeing the news anywhere. So one thing I'm not really doing at all is just posting news. I've got a lot of friends who will just repost the news, and they don't really want that. And what I'm doing now, and I've learned more and more, a couple of things I've learned, I feel as though that my page has become big because I tend not to take a side. I kind of point ironically. I'd kind of lean one way or lean the other way or point to an irony or something like that. But I tend to write in a way that opens up for discussion. It almost invites discussion. And people feel as though it's a space that they can talk to other people. I think most of the colleagues that I'm seeing on Facebook, they tend to be much more ideological. They'll take a position and they'll really hammer it. And I feel as though that's a bit redundant, actually. So maybe it's the old journalist in me that...
Well, that's what I'm wondering. It's great, A, to be curious, to be putting that up and inviting the town hall space, really. People come in respectfully. on that topic, respectfulness, are you having to play the administrator very often and delete things?
I've had to do that quite a bit, actually. So I've even had to delete the two culprits that made my Facebook page big in the first place because they started to really go crazy. I think they got angry that my Facebook page got so large. Their presence wasn't noted. They just fitted in with thousands of other people there, you know. So it's, you know, there are problems with creating such a big Facebook page, having to check, and you know, I can fall under the new hate speech legislation.
Need a social media monitor / secretary / administrator to keep a close eye.
But one of the benefits of, you know, I've opened the gate in politics, and they're the ones that go really large. So from the Netanyahu one, I kind of followed through the whole Bondi thing because the country was so kind of heated. I posted a few funny ones on Susan Ley because she was kept opening her mouth about this and that. She was hilarious. The ones that also went huge was the Writers' Week kerfuffle. You know, I posted, and some of the stories I'm actually doing, Michael, now is that I'm actually doing kind of little news summaries with a little bit of a twist on the end of it. So so people, instead of having to wade through a vast article, I'll do the paragraph. And then I'll put a little bit of my own little spin on it. It's ironic, this and that. And that just seems to almost, that's what my learning has been, is that I think that we want our information well written in a little bit of a pocket, not too ideological. There's a way of communicating, I think, through Facebook that is that really draws people in.
So what are the current Facebook rules? How many words or?
There are no limit number of words.
People go
on forever. One of the things that we have learnt is that I don't think Facebook likes us reposting articles because, in fact, someone was saying that you can't just simply repost articles in Canada, for instance.
Well, that's because the laws were changed when it comes to news. Once upon a time, when the Australian government was fighting Facebook, they wanted them to pay. Fremantle Shipping News, amongst others, got blocked on Facebook.
In fact, I don't even think now they don't really want newspapers to share articles. So what I tend to do now is grab an image and write my own summary of it. And I used to actually say, if you want the full story, the link is in the comments. I'm actually going to say to stop that now because to some extent people know that.
And this is what I'm taking from what you've been telling me, that you start a post off on Facebook assuming that people have read the drama with the traffic down at Stirling Bridge in Fremantle or what's going on in Gaza at this minute, and you pick up on a conversation that people are already having amongst themselves. They're educated into this, and you start conducting what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Then I've looked at what you've been doing, an adult conversation.
It just becomes something else. Yeah, so I was looking this morning, actually, at the Pauline Hanson movie that's out there.
The Pauline Hanson movie?
And it's
she made a movie?
Well, I think she somehow, I don't know where the money comes from. I think Gina might be supplying some of that money there. But rather than actually putting the trailer up for the movie, I just actually grabbed an image from the movie and kicked the conversation up because I think that people on my Facebook, as you say, are so up with what's going on in the news, they don't even need to be told. You know, they're in a debate. So we've got a very large educated audience there.
So if I've gone to the movie, the Pauline Hanson movie, is it real people or is this
it's animation.
Oh, it's animation.
It's something like South Park. Some of my people are pushing back against the comparison with South Park.
I imagine it is. And the dramatic things happen. Has Wayne Hancock come and blown up the middle of Australia and created a uranium mine?
Well, all of that thing's happening. There's LGBTQI community there. All the villains in there, the white men are depicted as if they're Hannibal Lecters. And Pauline flies in and blows up Uluru.
Goodness.
And so I'm curious, and it's being shown in private fundraising ventures, so it's all very, but I do notice that Pauline Hanson does, look, I have never really ventured much into Australian politics, it's kind of not my area, but when I start seeing, I'm interested in the kind of what I would call the cultural, theatrical spin-off from it, and so it's something I come in almost as slightly ignorant in the sense that I allow all of my people in there who are much better informed than I am to explain to me, please tell me why this occurs.
Exactly. So,
in fact, I put a legal one up the other day. I was very interested in the case of the bomber in the city, you know, the city bomber.
In Forest Place.
And they chose, his lawyer asked him not to be named. And yet on the same newspaper, I was reading The West, there was a huge story on the poor, the woman who had sexual relations with his student. And yet I thought to myself, wow, why is he, her name, surely the lawyer would have asked her name to be suppressed. And why, and then they get away. So in other words, you can suppress that from a bomber, but you can't suppress that. And what I learned from, beautifully I learned from my colleagues, was that story was leaked at some point weeks and weeks ago. So the lawyer didn't even have a chance to ask for her name to be suppressed because the West had already gotten onto it.
There is a strong principle through the law that there shouldn't be suppression. And I think the bomber, from what I've read and would assume, had the name suppressed because such a terrible thing happening could be the target of
inside of prison. There. But you know, so there's again an example of me. It gets into discussion. So you know, it's my very ignorance. So you know, you as an interviewer and me and I was an interviewer. You don't always want to be in the position of knowing everything. You know, when you prepare. So when you're talking to somebody, you always want to leave that space for discussion. I always try to leave that, and I think that's part of the reason for the success. I'll leave the question open that more informed minds than mine can start to explain things.
So do you find yourself drawing back from responding to what someone has said? You let it hang there, or do you try and
I do. I don't try to cover everything. In fact, some of my posts get so large. And in fact, I saw somebody posted an article on the Fringe World, which on at the moment, I think it ran in the Fremantle Herald.
I love Fringe World.
And it was an attack by one of the artists. And this is an ongoing discussion. So I keep my arts hat on. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. I'll repost. I don't really have a dog in the fight of Fringe World. It's not something that's been a big part of my psyche. And my God, that just triggered. So what that did is triggers the anti and pro Fringe World, the artist versus the audience. And so I actually that's actually where it becomes an interesting journalism tool for me, because I'm finding I'll throw a story out there and there'll be leads everywhere.
That really is. And that you find yourself being taken in different directions. The subject matter can be important in each case, but the outcomes can be different. Discussions about anti-Semitism can sort of take you around and around a deep hole. There's going to be a royal commission. Some of those thoughts and ideas may well turn into submissions made to the royal commission.
Yeah.
But what do you do with Fringe World? Well, I guess the organisers take on board that if there are too many artists and they're not making enough money out of it, they're not going to come back.
Yeah.
And that annoys people.
And that raises an interesting question. So I'm interested just at a journalism level of it's like a lead, you know, please tell me about this. And as a journalist, I'm kind of watching things play. But some of the areas that have become almost a bit too dangerous for me is Palestine, Israel.
It's a really tough one. The Sydney News has just posted a story today based on a press release by six Jewish organisations who have called for a boycott on the and demonstrations against the Israeli President Isaac Herzog arriving here in a week's time. And I think that's important information, but you have to be very careful when you post about what language you use, what you repeat, and you don't want to inflame people. At the same time, freedom of speech, the importance of having a discussion. But you've been through that with Israeli.
Well, in fact, and I posted one on the influencer that was blocked from coming. And I made the comment, and it was probably wrong, and I had been ill-informed, where I did assume that he was blocked under the new hate laws. And they're saying to me, no, that kind of blocking has been going on since the 70s.
Oh, they don't give visas.
And so I didn't, I was interested that that was all coming through nicely, but the problem was I started to see anti-Semitic comments started to land on the page. And I wasn't in the headspace to sit on my desk and start deleting them. So I actually deleted the whole post. I'm a bit wary now about dealing with these questions.
It's really tough. At the same time, I don't want to use the word exciting, it's an important time in Australia to have these grown-up discussions about what we're doing. Because anti-Semitism just reminds us all that we don't want racism.
Yeah.
It comes in all sorts of forms.
And indeed. And I've maintained what's been interesting for me, Michael, well, I've dipped into politics, even though I'm known as a cultural person, and say and they've gone huge. I mean, the Writers' Week was huge. I'd put three or four up there about Writers' Week, and there were thousands of people jumping in that one there. They go to the East Coast. But I've always maintained, what I've always hoped for is that enlarging the audience, it allows my arts related stories to go a little bit bigger, and that's happening as well. So I posted something this morning, a review of an old series I've been watching, Little Drummer Girl, which is an amazing series about Israel and Palestine. Wow, people seem to think that Israel Palestine is a new issue coming out of terrorism in Europe in the 70s. It's really quite an interesting area. And so I'm interested in where culture meets politics as well. You know, so interesting films, interesting. And so what I've allowed for is the art stories to become bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's a great forum locally, you know.
Well, that begs the question, what happens with Mark Niglazis and this new career?
I love it because it's quick and responsive. You know, as a journalist, I worked in a big newspaper for a long time where everything was very quick turnaround. Nowadays, you know, that's all shriveled and kind of died. And even now I contribute to certain websites and, you know, it's got no, it doesn't have that excitement anymore, that traction, that quick turnaround. And to some extent, I'm really enjoying the sort of speed of Facebook. I'm not, you know, there are some big bloggers out there that deal with politics or deal with, that Michael West is very interesting. He's another interesting journalist. But they almost have their kind of industries in themselves.
One of the big developments in quite recent years is Substack.
Yeah.
People who want to, in many respects, monetize their learning and their contributions find themselves putting their material up in Substack, and you can subscribe, and some of it's accessible without that. But
it's something I'd like to explore, actually. I'd love to be able to just simply make, you know, I guess one of the, you know, as a, I had the real privilege as a journalist of really being my own boss for 20-25 years. I did what I wanted, and people appreciated it or whatever. Now, as an older person, I'm having to deal with young people telling me what to do and what not to do, and that really annoys the hell out of me. And so to be able to get onto Facebook and say exactly what I want, or not exactly, because I'm not, funny enough, I'm the most old-fashioned Facebook person imaginable. I still write as if I'm writing for the New York Times. I still go for that sort of propriety and balance. I'm very careful with it, that the facts are right, and I double check.
I was talking with someone just the other night about your film reviews from the old days.
Yeah.
And the comment was made, with which I fully agree, that when I had a Mark Niglazis film review in front of me, I was like, that's exactly the way I approached that film, and that's what I took away, right on the money. And that's the beauty, if you can maintain that sort of approach.
Yeah, and even now, and you know what, I've also realised that people are now not reading the long reviews. I mean, I was terrible because I used to fight with my editor. It's too long, Mark. It's too long, Mark. And I said, well, I need to say that. And you know what? I've actually become the editor of myself, and I now realise that if I can nail it in 400 words, 300 words, I think I've become very good at 300 words. In whatever I'm doing, 300 words, that's enough. And whatever I'm doing, and even shorter. And I've got a feeling that's the kind of new world of communication.
It is interesting, isn't it? The minute, too, that you put it into a digital form. I mean, Alan Bruce famously converted The Guardian from being a print newspaper to being a global force, but it's entirely digital. So you have to rely on people bringing up the homepage or perhaps picking something up through Facebook or another digital.
It used to be that people, they would say, oh, you know, read a little bit of it, then go to the story. I think that people don't go to the story anymore. I think it's all there in
Facebook. So you want to get it. And you keep noticing that the key elements of stories are all there in about 5 dot points at the beginning.
I think so. And I'm starting to really, and I don't mind that because sometimes I think people, you know, I do the reading. I'll read 4 or 5 Guardian stories, the New York Times story, and I say, well, what's the essence of that? And then I'll do my little take on it, and then hopefully using the language that I use, that people enjoy that sort of language, and then maybe put a little ironic comment on the end of it, then I'll post it just as it is. And as I say, I'm even stopping making links to stories because I think people want it in that little sort of moment.
Well, they can follow up the links they like.
They can, like, people know. I don't need to tell people how to do Google searches anymore.
Yeah.
So people have told me, you know, get onto TikTok, get onto that sort of thing. And people are doing a lot more of, you know, as you say, I'm not sure that I might have got the face for the camera anymore. I still don't mind the traditional
It's tricky, isn't it? What medium do you use? I mean, there's YouTube. That became very fashionable for a period. Sometimes thought of taking shipping news onto YouTube. But why wouldn't you use TikTok? I still don't understand TikTok.
It's also, you know, I did use Facebook as almost like a personal diary as well. You know, what's on my mind today? What's interesting me? Sometimes I regret putting things up. I posted
too much, what they call it, top of head. You don't want to let it just fall off and hit the Facebook page.
I wrote a piece about a new AI movie or a TV series that came out, and that really got a lot of people very, very angry, and I think to myself, maybe I probably was a bit too enthusiastic about it. But sometimes I think I'm willing to leave stuff there, you know, maybe make a slight adjustment to things, you know. I think also a strong visual is really quite important as well.
How do you do the strong visual?
I think, you know, I look for the visual metaphor. So for instance, I was looking at the, I don't want to keep putting pictures of Trump and Epstein up there or whatever. So there was when the recent batch of Epstein files came out, it, you know, they kept saying everyone's going to be searching for the next two years for the name Donald Trump. You know, where's Trump? Because that's really the essence of it. And so I grabbed a picture of where's Wally or where's Waldo. I remember the old cut labyrinth and stuck that up there. And that became the vision. People, that sort of stopped people to see what that is. So that's a kind of a visual metaphor. I look for something like
that. Yeah, it's fresh and it's interesting.
And I still think I do think the image does hold people's eye. I do think so. I probably now need to speak to a Facebook expert to learn, teach me how to exploit it a little bit more. So I wouldn't mind. It's starting to interest me. It's starting to really interest me as a form, actually.
Well, it really is, and to find out just where Facebook's gone or heading to in this semester.
And it's also, you know, and the one that really impressed me recently, Michael, I was wandering through the city on a 40-degree day, and I noticed the heat changes within the city itself. So I took a picture of the trees in Murray Street and just sat down in the library and put down, wow, this is, you know, it was a lot cooler under those trees, and I posted it. And that ended up with 1,000 comments or 1,000 likes, and I thought to myself, now that's interesting, because that one is specifically Perth. There's one thing getting 1,000 comments on a story that pertains to the entire country, but when it's actually just Perth, I think, wow, that's interesting. I also posted a video, I've never done that before, of the new movie studio, and that ended up with 34,000 views, just that one, people were clicking on the little movie. Well, and I checked out channel 9 and 7, and I actually outstripped 7 and 9. So I do think you start to build a community, the algorithms start favouring you a little bit. So, and I keep thinking I'm going to the top all the time. So I think there's a bit of nothing succeeds like success in Facebook. It tends to favour those who are successful. Some of the drawbacks are getting kicked off Facebook. I've been kicked off 5 times in the space of about 3 weeks.
Oh, sorry, you've been kicked off Facebook 5 times? What did
you
do? Yeah,
I'm not sure. I think you only have to click on does this content concern you? And it goes to Meta and they block your account and you have to argue to get back on.
And you argued and got back on?
I did. Funnily enough, I was talking to, no doubt, AI as opposed to a real person, but their AI seemed to be quite responsive, so I was able to get back on. But I've got a feeling that might all be to do with, a couple of times it's to do with spam. Somebody started spamming me.
Well, this is the other side of them. Interested in, you become popular, but shipping news occasionally gets hit by bots. Tech people say they're all coming in from Eastern Europe, from Russia, or in the old days, Ukraine, when they were in those things. Do you get not just the serial pester keeps writing, that's the free speech, but do you think you're being
spammed? I'm not convinced that all of that million views is legitimate million views, but for the life of me, I can't work out why. Is there, for instance, the pro-Israel lobby? Is there an anti-Israel lobby? Are they at war on the liberal? I've got a feeling some of my big posts recently have been to do with Albanese and Bondi. I posted, again, looking for metaphors, I described I've been sort of interested in Albanese's comeback from being on the canvas, and I was describing him as like Muhammad Ali doing the rope-a-dope, remember, from the famous Rumble in the Jungle. And so I had a picture of Ali and Albanese, and that sort of caught people's attention. But again, they became very big and very ugly. So the downside to all of this is that I've opened the door to bots vitriol, ugliness, and I think the Pauline Hanson emergence is going to really flood the zone, as they say.
Well, I always ask myself, how long is an ideal length of a podcast? We're approaching 30 minutes.
Oh, I've talked way too much.
So, no, we're not. I mean, it could go on for a long time, but we have to draw it to a close, I think. But I'm interested in these sorts of things. How much time are you finding yourself spending, and how do you find yourself selecting the next topic?
I think I'm going to start, and I've started doing this now, is doing a kind of a morning couple of posts, you know, and I'm finding people used to say, oh, it's ideal to post in the evening, but I'm finding that stuff is okay in the morning, you know. It's, I think there's a lot of older folks that, it's Facebook is a medium for the older crowd. They're at home, they're reading their coffee, and I'll throw something up in the morning, and you know, maybe two or three things I like. I still like to review, so I reviewed, you know, a TV show or a movie or something, I throw that up as well, as a piece of news or something that's quirky, it's interesting me. I'm not posting like I used to do, which is a bit more kind of funny response. I'm a bit more considered. So I'm actually sort of, I want the brand to be back to being a journalist. I could treat it kind of seriously. I put it up there to make sure it's correct. Keep an eye on what's going on. I sometimes find that there's just too much, you know, like there's stuff that's just flood. I mean, I don't know if there's much point in posting about Trump anymore. That's kind of, you know, all over the shop there. But if I can find something that's interesting, you know, like for instance, a story the other day, I haven't posted on this, about Spain's embrace of immigrants, for instance. And I find those sort of things really interesting to me. Polls are interesting too. I find that really interesting. I don't quite understand polls and how they work. That's kind of, so to some extent, Michael, I'm, you know, as an arts writer at my late age, starting to wander into the world of politics and having to consult people who have spent their entire lives obsessing over this stuff.
Well, I think there's plenty of room for new thought and new faces and new thinkers about how all that works. Politicians and their campaigners get lost in their own worlds at times.
I think so. But I do think that Facebook is revealing to me that we really don't, the mainstream media doesn't give us a clear indication of what's going on in the country. And I saw it was extraordinary, the anti-Albanese campaign conducted by the Murdoch media over Bondi was just breathtaking to see. I've just not seen the media more biased. And I really feel the real subject of the moment, and one that I've always posted on, is the media itself. And I think that, you know, it's having to justify itself financially.
Well, we'll finish on that topic, but it's one that totally fascinates me, and that's really why we're here. Facebook's no longer new media. Mind you, it's only 20-odd years old. What is the future of the media? You've been in it, you sort of grew up in it, you were in it and out of it and back in it, and here you are doing what you're doing.
I think
now.
It's so incredibly fragmented now. You know, I still do radio, for instance, ABC Radio. 6PR has got sold the other day as a part of a package of radio stations for $50 million. I mean, that means that something like 6PR, I think it was valued at $5 million. A couple of homeowners in the western suburbs could sell off a piece of land and go and become media moguls because they're shrunken down so much. So it's an incredibly fragmented media landscape. And I think, yeah, I was always cynical about social media, and I was really clung to old media, but I think now it's so fragmented. I think your Substacks that you mentioned, there are influences everywhere. I don't know if they, you know, what is the future of it. And then we've got AI coming in, and I think that's going to be an incredible challenge. What is real and what is not real? People are sending me stuff all the time, and I'm having to check to see if it's real or not. I think people are now bypassing old media and talking intelligently. I've got more intelligent people on my Facebook than you're ever going to have on Talkback Radio.
Well, Mark Glasses, thanks for joining me today.
I'm just learning. Maybe in a year's time we'll reconnect to see if my 4,000 followers have gone up any longer. But I have noticed, Michael, in the space of 3 or 4 weeks, I've picked up 1,000 new followers. And well, so that's an interesting gain.
So, well, you'll have to find the right description. But, ladies and gentlemen, listening to this podcast, that's...
Call me an influencer now, Michael.
I was about to call you an influencer. This is the new reinvented Mark McGlasses, influencer, and soon to be multimedia.
Mogul. I think I'll have to have my own company there, Michael. So we'll see.
Thanks for joining me, mate.
Thanks, Michael.